Senhoras e senhores, boa tarde. Sejam todos muito bem-vindos ao terceiro dia de trabalho do terceiro Encontro Brasileiro de Proteção Eletromagnética, com o tema As Radiações Eletromagnéticas e o Cuidado com Nossas Crianças. Este evento é organizado pela Rede Brasil pela Tecnologia Segura, EMF Brasil, Celular e Saúde e Ionize Brasil, com apoio do Ministério Público do Distrito Federal e Territórios, Instituto Federal do Rio Grande do Sul, Amibras, Associação de Medicina Integrativa do Brasil, Abrampa, Associação Brasileira dos Membros do Ministério Público de Meio Ambiente, Rede Latino-Americana de Ministério Público Ambiental, Escola Pan-Americana para Estudo e Tratamento da Dor, Academia Ibero-Americana de Medicina Biológica e Odontoestomatologia, FUNAM, Fundação para a Defesa do Meio Ambiente, Bemer Brasil, Angevan Ozonomatique, HealthTech Laboratório, Lemos Laboratório, Rede Latino-Americana por La Tecnologia Segura, Latam XTS e campanha Slow Phone. O primeiro tema a ser discutido hoje é Movimentos Internacionais de Proteção Eletromagnética. Nossa mediadora é a Daniela Perlato, advogada em Direito Ambiental e presidente do EMF Brasil, que a partir de agora tem a palavra para apresentar os painelistas convidados e coordenar os trabalhos.
Boa tarde a todos os espectadores do terceiro encontro de proteção eletromagnética brasileiro. Eu sou a Daniela Perlato, advogada ambiental e presidente da IMF Brasil. Nosso comitê dá as boas-vindas à doutora Estela Mikalidou, presidente da Comissão Nacional de Cyprus, Ambiente e Saúde da Criança e perita da Comissão Europeia e da Organização Mundial de Saúde em Riscos em Saúde Ambiental. Damos a boa-vinda à doutora Erica Mallory Blythe, fundadora do FIRE, Iniciativa de Médicos para Radiação e Meio Ambiente, médica com mais de 10 anos de experiência no Reino Unido, membro honorário da Sociedade Britânica de Medicina Ecológica, médica conselheira na Associação de Radiofrequência Científica da Oceania e da Eletrosensibilidade Britânica, membro das regulações internacionais sobre radiações não ionizantes. Boas-vindas também ao doutor Ronald Melnick, ex-toxicologista sênior do Programa Nacional dos Estados Unidos, por mais de 28 anos no Instituto Nacional de Saúde e Ciências Ambientais, autor de revisões científicas para a Organização Mundial de Saúde da pesquisa sobre o câncer, que classifica as radiofrequências possivelmente carcinogênicas. Passou um ano no escritório de Ciências Políticas Tecnológicas da Casa Branca e é colega emérito do Instituto Ramazzini na Itália. Boas-vindas também a Theodora Scarraro, diretora executiva do Environment Health Trust, junto com a doutora Deborah Davis, epidemiologista e toxicologista, fundadora e presidente da Environmental Health Trust, ex-ministra do governo meio ambiente do governo Clinton nos Estados Unidos e que infelizmente teve um imprevisto e não poderá estar presente no nosso encontro. It is an honor to have all of you serious expert professionals on this path to inform citizens of the world about the risks of radio frequencies. Welcome to our panel, and I'll give you the word to Dr. Stella from now on. Please, Dr. Stella, welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody. Again, I have to say that it's a real honor for me to be in this very interesting conference. Many thanks to the organizers for the kind invitation, and especially Silvia and Alina for all the support they gave to materialize this. And so my intervention today will be a sort of continuation of what I have told in the first day. And I think the speakers after me also show clearly that here we have a very big problem. We have a very high risk. with a lot of implications on children's health, in particular, not only now, but in their whole life later on. And especially, I am very much concerned about the impact on the developing brain of the children. But also we know that we have a big problem today because there is a controversy of ideas. The governments are not willing to take measures. And we have the INCRIB and WHO and all these who claim that the only problem is thermic effects, but we know very well that we have biological effects. So the question is what we can do to this, to protect our children, at least to minimize the exposure. Either you have to stand by and waiting the governments to do things, or we have to do something ourselves. And this is what a Cyprus National Committee on Children's Environment and Health have as a mandate. So please, could I have the first slide, please? So as a committee, we are committed to contribute towards minimize the exposure of the children via raising awareness, via education, and of course, we try also within our terms of reference, which is set by the government, and we have a real advisory role. So we try to influence also the policy, the policy makers. In particular, we try to influence the parliament, which in Cyprus has a very has the great power, but also we advise the Minister of Health and other ministries in relation to this issue. The next slide, please. Can I have the next? Yes. So, as I said, it's a very difficult task, because we have one hand, the higher obstacle, to my opinion, the highest obstacle is the position of the European Union, is the position of WHO, and all these that are claiming that there is no problem, in simple words. So the governments are taking into consideration those positions, and they are not very, very willing to do something. So we try to push at the policy level, and we try to explain that, yes, here is a case where we have to implement precautionary principle, because precautionary principle said exactly that it should be implemented when we don't have the absolute proof of the problem, which is the case so far. I mean, we don't have absolute proof yet, but we have strong evidence and the impact on health are very serious. So we have to combine the science that we have now with precautionary principle. And this is the main argument that we provide at the parliament and also at the Ministry of Health. The second, and we managed at least in 2017 to halt the big project was about to Wi-Fi every school in Cyprus. So we halt this project, we stopped this project, and we had a decree on the behalf of the Ministry of Education, which prohibits Wi-Fi at nurseries and public elementary schools. It was one step which is I consider very important, at least. In the same year, we have a Nicosia Declaration in Cyprus signed by the Vienna Austria Medical Association, the Medical Association of Cyprus, and our committee, where we raise all the issues. Everything is on our website, on the English version. You may see all the documents. So in this declaration, we raise up the issue of need to make new standards which are relevant to the biological effects, which will be relevant to the real exposure which we face now, and not minutes of exposure as it is provided in the encrypt limits, etc., etc. We raise the issue that we need to take precautionary action, protective measures at schools, at hospitals, etc., etc. The one very important thing from my experience, which I would like to share with you, is that try in your country to have a good cooperation with the medical community, the doctor community, the medical association, pediatric association. We are fortunate that in our committee, both the medical association and pediatric association are represented. In all our activities, I mean, especially at the policy level, are signed by those organizations along with the national committee. So this creates a very dynamic situation where it's not that easy to say, oh, this is not so important, is a committee say so. It's not only the committee, but it's the medical community in the country. So this is something which you can invent. And of course, we pay a lot of attention in training professionals like doctors and teachers. We participate usually in the annual seminar of the Medical Association of the Pediatric Association. And also we make special training courses. This year and the previous year, we are going to train all the teachers in the kindergarten because we consider that it's quite important to start from that level, the education of the children. And we believe that the children can be empowered. We have the experience with another campaign that we make for the passive smoking some years ago, before we have law prohibiting prohibiting the ETS. So before that, we had a campaign and we trained the small kids at the elementary school. And it was fantastic how the kids demand from their parents not to smoke in the house, not to do something which is bad for their health. So we put a lot of emphasis on training of the teachers in the kindergarten and to provide for them material which can be used at the kindergarten. And one example is the video that you are going to see at the end of this presentation, which intends actually to make the kids sensitive enough to understand that the telephone are not a choice, that the digital devices are not a choice for them, and when and how they can be used by them. So, and we have also another intervention at the parliament during 2019, two interventions in relation to the discussion on 5G. I presented in first day what we have proposed to the parliament, together with the Medical Association of Cyprus. I can repeat it if you allow me. First of all, we ask to ban the use of wireless internet and wireless devices in all schools for children up to age of 15, to establish free from 5G protective zones around schools, playgrounds, nurseries, and hospitals. Third, to promote biological safe criteria in assessing the exposure of children as an intermediate measure to the change of limits, which will take time and is very difficult to be decided at least. And the fourth, we propose that the right to know for the citizens should be supported, and this can only be done by raising awareness, and that the responsibility for this campaign should be to the responsible for this campaign should be the Medical Association and this and our committee, so that we provide the people science-based good information and good practices on how they can be protected. These were some of the, our activities. Can I have the next slide, please? The next, yes. Oh, the previous one, please. Sylvia, this one. As you understand, it's a very difficult task, and we make, we use a lot of media actions and tools to achieve our target. And I would like to express my sincere thanks to Deborah Davis and Theodora and the Environmental Health Trust for all the support and the material they provide to us and to the Baby Safe Project. As you can see, we issue a lot of leaflets, guidance leaflets on in relation to radiation. We do seminar and training courses. We interviewed by TV in Cyprus, and some programs we provide information to the people on how to deal with this issue, what is the science behind, and what we need to do to protect the children. This year we have a series of podcasts under the umbrella of Child Shield. One of the aspects is related to the protection from non-ionizing radiation. And we have also a big campaign promoting the wired connection of the wired internet connection instead of Wi-Fi, especially for children during the COVID period, where they spend a lot of time in home doing distance learning. So we had this guide on safe internet connection. Next slide, please. Here is our campaign travels on buses around Cyprus and says, "Don't irradiate me, learn how to protect me." This was the message on the buses. The next slide, please. Here is part of our small pilot project in Makarios Pediatric Hospital, where we managed at least to reduce exposure in the intensive care unit and in the unit of the preterm kids by disconnecting Wi-Fi and provide wired internet, any wired internet, and advise the people not to use their mobile phones, not approaching the beds of the children with their mobile phones unless it is on flight mode. And we teach also the parents there with various material that we provide to them, that they can hear music, they can take photos, they can make videos, but all this has to be done under flight mode to protect the children. The next slide, please. Here is our campaign of 2022-2023 with the aim to protect the fetus. In Cyprus, we have the Center of Preventive Medicine, Americos Argyrou, where all the new mother, the newborn kids are brought for a preliminary control. So we cooperate with this and with Makarios Hospital and the Medical Association. And we distribute a package for all the new mothers which are visiting this this center. We make, we use the Baby Safe booklet. We get the kind permission to translate it also in Greek language, and we are very grateful for that. We distribute also our book, which is only in Greek, but provides a lot of information regarding many, many toxic factors which are in home, including environmental tobacco smoke, including pesticides, etc. This is a booklet having everything which a mother should know. Here is the risk. What can I do? And also we make some, in this year, we are going to make some presentation to pregnant women at Makarios Hospital. And also we have a video for pregnant women. This is our campaign. The next slide, please. This is ongoing. And now we are going to launch a new campaign in 2023 named Shields for Protecting Our Children from Toxic Factor, which is under the auspices of the Minister of Health, which is very important. We had a meeting with him and we discussed, and he decided to put it under his auspices, this campaign. And it has three targets. The first one is safe and age-related exploitation of technology, which is a big problem now, because we know that those digital devices are provided to infants, to babies, to small kids, to everyone. So we want the people to be educated. And of course, in this, we include the aspects of how to use safe those technologies with wired internet, with flight modes, etc. The second is related to the tobacco smoke, which is not only the tobacco, the classical tobacco, but we have also the e-cigarettes, which is a big problem now because the people consider that is safe for everybody. That is not a problem, which is not the case. And the last, which will be done at the end of the year, is in relation to climate change and the child health. This is our new campaign. Next slide, please. And about our videos are provided, any country can use them if they like. If they ask us, we give the permission to do so under center conditions without any money involved, of course. It's free of charge, but we need to have some provisions. So we can provide those videos without any subtitles, and then they can each country can put subtitles in their own language, and we have already translated in English, French, German, Estonian, Hebrew, Swedish, Czech, etc. And our videos have been adopted by the Austrian Medical Association. The German version is under their auspices, and we are very honored with this. We go to the next slide, please. Next slide, please.
Dr. Stella, this is the last slide.
The last, okay. I think I had something else that I forgot to put it on the slide, but nevertheless, what I wanted to say is that there are a lot of things that we can do. We don't have to wait from the governments to take the initiative, because this would be very slowly, particularly as a member of European Union, Cyprus is a member, we can expect our government to do anything which is not made at the European Union level. But we discuss at the Ministry of Health, and we propose that at least for the evaluation of the exposure of the children, we should use the biological relevant criteria, which we have, and that we should take any possible measure to reduce the exposure. This is the issue. And what we tell always to parents is that it's in your hands to do something, because the children, depending on their age, they spend 60 to 90% of their time in home and in school. Even those two places, we try to minimize the exposure by using, for instance, wired internet, by using in home less devices. We don't use Wi-Fi in home. We use less devices. We explain to them that if you use the more devices you are using, the more exposure you have in your home. And it's not only the antennas, which is outside, but it's what and how you work in your home. And here is your decision to do something. So this is our approach. And I would like to thank you for your kind attention. Thank you very much. Can we see now the video, please?
Τα νηπιαγωγεία, όαση προστασίας των παιδιών από την ακτινοβολία των κινητών τηλεφώνων, tablets και του Wi-Fi. Μαθαίνουμε τα παιδιά μας πώς να προστατεύονται. Αγαπημένα μου παιδιά, γιατροί και άλλοι επιστήμονες σε όλο τον κόσμο μας προειδοποιούν ότι η ακτινοβολία που εκπέμπουν τα κινητά, τα tablets και το Wi-Fi είναι φλοβερή. Μπορεί να βλάψει την υγεία και ιδιαίτερα το κεφαλάκι μας. Την ακτινοβολία δεν τη βλέπουμε γιατί μοιάζει με αόρατες φλογίτσες. Εσείς τα παιδιά είστε πολύ ευαίσθητα στην ακτινοβολία. Πώς να προφυλασσόμαστε?
Όμως, κυρία μου, τα πώς θα μπορούμε μέσω του tablet ή στο κινητό να δούμε τις φωτογραφίες και το βίντεο της γιορτούλας μας? Ξέρετε, μαμά, μου το δίνεις.
Μαριλένη μου, το tablet δεν είναι παιχνίδια. Τα παιδάκια δεν θα πρέπει να το χρησιμοποιούν ούτε ακόμη σαν τηλέφωνο. Και ξέρετε γιατί? Γιατί βγάζουν αυτές τις αόρατες και πολύ βλαβές φλογίτσες. Την ακτινοβολία δηλαδή. Τα καλά νέα είναι ότι μέσα στο κινητό και το τάπλετ βρίσκεται κρυμμένος ένας πολύ καλός φίλος που μπορεί να μας προφυλάξει. Είναι ένα μαγικό αεροπλανάκι που όταν το ανάβεις μπαίνει σε λειτουργία πτήσης. Δηλαδή πετάει και παίρνει μακριά την ακτινοβολία, τις αόρατες και βλαβερές φλογίτσες. Μόνο το αεροπλανάκι μπορεί να μας προφυλάξει από αυτές.
Μα πού είναι αυτό το αεροπλανάκι να το ξεκινήσω?
Εδώ είναι.
Όλα αυτά τα κουμπάκια είναι φίλοι μας, να τα ανάψω?
Όχι, αυτά δεν είναι φίλοι μας, γι' αυτό τα έχω σβήσει. Θα πατήσουμε μόνο το αεροπλανάκι. Να θυμάστε, όταν παίρνετε το κινητό ή το τάπλετ, μόνο το μαγικό αεροπλανάκι πρέπει να είναι. Όλα τα κουμπάκια πρέπει να είναι σκά.
Τι είναι ωραία, μπορούμε να δούμε φωτογραφίες, να ακούσουμε τραγουδάκια, μόνο παρέα με το φίλο μας το αεροπλανάκι που παίρνει μακριά τις λαβερές φλογίτσες.
Πότε χωρίς αυτό?
Μπράβο, παιδιά μου! Πολύ χαίρομαι που από εδώ και πέρα θα προσέχετε τον εαυτό σας. Σβήνοντας όλα τα κουμπάκια και ξεκινώντας το μαγικό αεροπλανάκι, διώχνετε την ακτινοβολία. Έτσι προφυλάσσετε όχι μόνο τον εαυτό σας, αλλά και τους γύρω σας. Είμαι πολύ περήφανη για εσάς.
Κυρία, στο σπίτι βλέπουμε και από το λάπτο βίντεο. Έχει και αυτό βλαβερές φλογίτσες.
Ναι, αν είναι ενωμένο με το Wi-Fi. Όμως, παιδάκια μου, υπάρχει και εκεί ένας πολύ καλός φίλος. Ο Ether το αλογάκι, ή αλλιώς Ethernet. Είναι και αυτό πολύ γρήγορο και συνεταιράκι με το αεροπλανάκι. Ο Ether είναι ένα μικρό καλωδιάκι που ενώνει απευθείας το λάπτοπ με το διαδίκτυο, χωρίς να χρειάζεται το Wi-Fi με τις επικίνδυνες φλογίτσες. Σβήνουμε το κουμπάκι του Wi-Fi και είμαστε αλείς με γρήγορο διαδίκτυο. Η Μανούλα και ο Μπαμπάκας μπορεί να μάθει πώς να ενώνει καλωδιάκι Ethernet στην ιστοσελίδα www.paidi.com.cy.
Εμείς μάθαμε να προστατεύουμε τον εαυτό μας από την επικίνδυνη ακτινοβολία με τις λαβερές φλογίτσες. Είναι εύκολο και μπορείτε κι εσείς. Φωνάζουμε τους φίλους μας το αεροπλανάκι, το συνεταιράκι του, το έκρε, το αλογάκι, και αυτά κρατούν μακριά από εμάς την ακτινοβολία.
Αγαπημένοι μας γονείς, ζητούμε και τη δική σας βοήθεια για να ζούμε και να μεγαλώνουμε και στο σπίτι και σε ένα ασφαλές περιβάλλον χωρίς να χρειάζεται ακτινοβολία. Η υγεία είναι δικαίωμα, μη μας στερείτε.
Μετατρέπουμε το νηπιαγωγείο στο σπίτι σε όαση προστασίας των παιδιών από την ακτινοβολία. Τα παιδιά μαθαίνουν να αξιοποιούν την τεχνολογία με ασφάλεια.
La sua dizione sarà meravigliosa. So this was our video. And it's the first time that this is presented. I mean, it's the first...
Is this the first time?
It's the first time, yes. So you honor your seminar with this, yes. It just finished.
Thank you very much for the inauguration here on our channel. That's very nice.
Thank you.
So, thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Estela, for your presentation. So I give you the word to Dr. Erica Mallory Blythe. And eu gostaria de falar para os nossos espectadores que o vídeo da doutora Estela será também traduzido, legendado para o português logo mais. Então, eu passo a palavra à doutora Erica. Dr. Erica, please.
We don't hear.
Sorry, I was muted. Would you like me to share my screen or will you be swapping it? Ah, yeah, great, thank you. And can I forward the slides from there? Let me just try. I'll go back and forth. No, I can't forward those slides. So shall I share the screen?
Hi, Dr. Erica. You can just press Alt and Tab and come back to our presentation that it's already on the presentation mode.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is that working?
Press again, please.
It's on my screen.
Yes, but it didn't change the slide. Maybe you should share screen again.
Ah, okay. It says stop sharing, so I'll stop sharing for a minute and then I'll start sharing again.
Yes, please.
Okay. So I'll come out of this one. Sorry for the delay for you guys. And I'll start sharing again. So share screen. Is that working for you now?
Yes, it's working.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. So I'm Erica Mallory Blythe. I'm going to be speaking about the child vulnerability to health effects of non-ionizing radiation. And I'm going to do this in conjunction with a paper that's recently been released from a group I've collaborated with, International Commission on Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Fields. I'm a special expert for that group and the founding director of Physicians Health Initiative for Radiation and Environment, or FHIR Medical. So this is the paper that we recently released, and will be spoken about in more detail by Ron Melnick. So I'm just going to focus on one assumption here, which is that there are no differences in absorption of RF, EMF, or susceptibility to this radiation for children. This assumption underlying the current guidelines is incorrect, and I'm going to share a bit of information about why that is. To do that, it's really useful to look back in time for a moment. So the same group who have set many current guidelines, the ICNIRP, in 2002 admitted that there are variations in tolerance and highlighted children, the elderly, and chronically ill as all potentially more susceptible, and questioned whether they might therefore need separate guidelines to safely accommodate that group. I think they certainly do, either that or a singular guideline which really safely, genuinely takes all of these groups into account. But why did they abandon this really important concept? When you look at their fact sheet here in 2020, they admit that exposure values from adults have been used to set the restrictions for children. Now, their reasoning behind this is because they say they're basing all of their health data on one parameter, essentially. That is core body temperature. So children have an excellent ability to thermoregulate. And what they have said is that because children's core temperature doesn't increase more than adults, that that means they are safe from all potential health effects, which is a gross oversimplification of the truth. And in the ICBE paper under Assumption 7, you'll see references for all of these figures demonstrating that we would expect potentially fivefold the radiation absorption in the eyes of a child, about double potentially in the brain, tenfold in the bone marrow of the skull, and up to 30-fold potentially in certain substructures within the brain like the hippocampus. This was illustrated some years before that by this important graphic from Om Gandhi looking at the modeling of absorption into the brain of a child when compared with that of an adult. And you can see how much more deeply the radiation would penetrate that brain. So it's not simply about core body temperature. That would be a very insensitive measure of health in relation to these kind of radiation exposures. And we really have to take into account non-thermal effects that can happen at orders of magnitude below that heating level. Looking at the unique anatomy of children, as we've just done in those slides, but also the tissue dielectrics of children. For example, neonates have on average a higher water content in their brain. This could make it their brain a more efficient microwave absorber. Unique physiology of children, they have developing systems which behave in many ways very differently to the more completed systems of an adult, particularly the neurological system, their reproductive systems, etc. They even have different types of cells in their bodies. I'll move on to that with my next slides. But before I do, I have to mention latency, which is, of course, a serious issue for children. Previous generations may only have been exposed in later life, whereas this current generation are exposed literally from conception. Now, when we think of something like carcinogenesis, which can have decades between the exposure and the manifestation of cancer, that becomes especially important in this group because they may be young adults or in the prime of their life at the point when those kinds of carcinogenic effects could manifest, overall increasing their risk. And this is just to remind that there are so many differences in their physiology. This is just one of them. Numerous studies have showed stem cells to be particularly sensitive to this kind of radiation. And here you can see the vast difference in the large number of stem cells present in a newborn when compared with an adult. So these are just a few of the disease endpoints, which I think are especially important when we're considering children. These first few are relating especially to the central nervous system, where we see a lot of these effects concentrated, are all rising in childhood populations. And there's credible literature which makes connection with these kinds of exposures, particularly strong evidence when we look at reproductive damage, particularly male reproductive harm. There are many papers now looking at damage to sperm, but also potentially structure and function of the testis. Also, some papers demonstrating concerns with oocytes, and little girls are born with all the egg cells they'll ever have. So this is especially important. They can't make new ones. And if those eggs are damaged at any point before reproduction, not only could that have an effect on their fertility, but also potentially cause damage that may manifest in their offspring. Leukemia was previously the leading cause of cancer death in children. And this is the literature here is more focused on effects linking with extremely low frequency ELF, but we must remember that the current communications frequencies in the radio frequency range are pulse modulated at ELF. And importantly, the next on the slide, brain tumors, this has been very much linked with radio frequency communication apparatus, and particularly glioblastoma multiforme and acoustic neuroma. There's some evidence that these are arising more in the younger populations, and the concerns raised by the human epidemiological data have really been corroborated from prestigious groups like the National Toxicology Program and the Ramazzini Institute, when you look at the large-scale animal studies demonstrating the same cell types of tumour in those groups. And we must mention briefly breast cancer. John West has published a case series of very young women who had breast cancers directly behind the antennae of the phones. These were very aggressive tumours, and he felt that there was very likely a causal link between carrying the phone, their phones in their bra, and the breast cancer that was detected. Electromagnetic hypersensitivity is primarily hallmarked by symptoms focused in the central nervous system again, headaches, insomnia, tinnitus, cardiac palpitations, and links in with the early points on this slide as well. And when we keep seeing these neurological effects, it's important for us to have a look at how robust that is in the literature. And I'll mention this from Henry Lai, published under the umbrella of the Bioinitiative report, showing 244 out of 336 papers. Very high percentage here showing effect, not just in human groups, but also in animal groups. And this is really important, especially when we look at electromagnetic hypersensitivity, where sometimes it's claimed that these effects might be somehow psychological. Obviously, animals can't be reading newspapers and scaring themselves about the effects of Wi-Fi or cell phones. So this gives us some idea of the consistency of these neurological effects. And we also have valid mechanisms, so some level of coherence with laboratory findings. You can see here, this is focused on data from this ICBE publication that I cited at the beginning of my talk, 124 out of 131 studies. That's 95% showing effects in terms of oxidative stress from these kinds of exposures. So it's been really well validated as a mechanism. Some would say indisputable at this point. So when we look at the health of children, and let's take a common scenario where children are exposed to this kind of radiation in school. So let's think about use of Wi-Fi in school. When we're computing that, we need to think carefully about risk versus benefit. And I've mentioned just a drop in the ocean of some of the endpoints which we're concerned about here in terms of risk. And the International Agency for Research on Cancer has designated this as a group 2B carcinogen, possible human carcinogen. So even just taking that risk alone, we need a really seriously demonstrable benefit to outweigh that risk in this young, non-consenting, and I would now go on to say non-benefiting group, because actually Wi-Fi in schools isn't there for essential education to children. It's there for ease of access to staff generally. They can access the internet using hardwired connections and mitigate all of these risks. So it's a really black and white scenario. We should be protecting our children in school absolutely immediately. Now, some governments have put out some information, and I want to say a massive thank you now to Dr. Michael Idu. You just heard those incredible resources put out by the Cyprus national government and with support of the Austrian Medical Chambers. Just a brilliant and important step forward to educate parents, schools, governing bodies, policymakers. France with their ban on Wi-Fi in kindergartens and restricting under six. These kinds of movements forward we need to be seeing rapidly in all countries, not just a few. This is just the NHS leaflet from the UK with a very humble warning here, which in fine print, saying that children and people under 16 should really only be using mobile phones for essential purposes. But the problem with this is that they did not disseminate that really important information. It's been around for years, but they didn't provide this for children, their parents or their teachers. And some schools are actually prescribing homework on smartphones. And of course, if we're going to caution against phones, we must absolutely be doing the same for tablets, which can have a comparable or even in some cases higher specific absorption rate than a tablet. So we need to see consistency about this advice. Now, it's sad and embarrassing that we often see health protection move more rapidly in courts of law than we do through health advisory or protection agencies. And that's certainly what we're seeing here. Multiple cases have now been won internationally, for example, demonstrating causality between mobile phones and brain tumours and allocating compensation there. And we are also seeing successful legal actions internationally on disability, showing electromagnetic hypersensitivity as a disability for multiple groups. This is one legal case in the UK where a child is found to be disabled by EHS and low EMF accommodations mandated for that child in school. So there is some movement forward, but it's not fast enough to protect health in a responsible way. And here are some of the points that we are asking for more generally in the summary of our paper with ICBE. We're looking for independent assessment of the effects and risks of RF with a thorough review, including recent evidence. Legitimate safety limits need to be devised. The public should be informed immediately and given information on how to reduce their personal exposures. We need to see an immediate moratorium on further RF emissions and prioritise protecting children. So how do we do that, protect our children? Well, we can remove using flight mode, replace using hardwired alternatives, and reduce using shielding techniques. It sounds so simple on this slide, but in reality, in the complex digital world that we now inhabit, this can be really challenging. But we need to start, and starting with children and focusing on children is an excellent place to begin. So thank you so much for listening, and muchas gracias to this fantastic Brazilian team for highlighting this really important and rapidly evolving issue. Thank you so much.
Hello, Dr. Erica.
Hi there. I've stopped sharing my screen and I can see you guys again.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Erica, for this amazing presentation. Daniela, can you continue?
Yes, so thank you very much, Dr. Erica. I guess I'll pass the next word to Theodora Scarado, please.
Actually, it's Rome Melnick.
Yes, correct. I'm sorry. So I give the word to Dr. Ronald Melnick.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah. Okay. Good afternoon from here.
Good afternoon.
I want to thank the organizers, especially Eileen and Danielle, for inviting me to participate in this important meeting. I'm trying
and
to show
Nalini.
My. I'm trying to show my slides. Oh, okay, here they go. Thank you. I'll be talking about the exposure limits that have been developed by the two agencies, one, International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, which sets limits that are followed by most of the nations of the world, and the Federal Communication Commission, which sets the limits for the United States. And I will try to show through a number of assumptions that have been made that the assumptions are not valid, and therefore the exposure limits are not valid for protecting health. I'll be speaking, as I mentioned, I think the introduction was in Portuguese, so I'm not sure what was told about me. But I'm retired from the National Toxicology Program, where I led the design of the NTP study on the carcinogenicity of mobile phone radiation in experimental animals. And I'll be speaking on behalf of the International Commission on Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Fields. Now, this commission was organized fairly recently. It's multidisciplinary consortium of scientists, we have doctors, professionals, Two of the eminent scientists who participate in this are Claudio Fernandez and Alvaro de Sales. And these are individuals who have been involved in research related to the biological health effects of electromagnetic fields. And the purpose is to make recommendations to protect humans and the environment and other species from any harmful effects of non-ionizing radiation. As mentioned, we recently published a paper, it was about 6 weeks ago, in Environmental Health, and we looked at a number of assumptions that underlie these exposure limit determinations. Two of the assumptions are explicit. Others, if they are not addressed in the guidelines, we feel that the assumption is that they do not matter. So we have derived 14 different assumptions, and I'll be addressing a number of these as I continue. Now, the electromagnetic spectrum extends from low frequency up to very high frequency where there's high photon energy. The area that we're mobile phone radiation is in this region of about 1 to 2 gigahertz. That is what has been used for years. But with 5G, the introduction is going to move that over to around 30 gigahertz, for which there is essentially no information. And there's talk of even moving this up further into the millimeter wave. This would be higher frequency radiation. Now, to address the issues of the assumptions, I first want to go into the basis for the exposures that limits that have been established by the ICNIRP and the FCC. These go back to studies that were conducted in monkeys by the Navy, U.S. Navy Department in the 1980s. And what the studies were based on were rats and monkeys that were trained to push a lever to obtain food. And after they were trained, they were exposed to radio frequency radiation at different frequencies and power levels. And what was reported was that at approximately a specific absorption rate, this is a measure of the internal absorption of the energy, that at that level of 4 watts per kilogram and higher, the response rates were decreased. This occurred in rats and in monkeys as well. And with monkeys, in addition, there was a 1 degree rise in their body temperature. So a few things about this. One is the number of animals that were studied in these particular groups was very small. There were 8 rats and 5 monkeys. And this is the basis for the exposure limits that are being used throughout the world. The studies were 40-minute or 60-minute durations. These are acute exposures. They don't tell you anything about long-term exposure. And they're only a single endpoint, this behavioral response to pressing a lever. This does not meet any reasonable standard for characterizing the potential of a hazardous agent. However, ICNIRP and the FCC made assumptions. The assumptions were there would be no adverse effects occurring below the putative threshold SAR of 4 watts per kilogram. And any reported biological effects would be due to excessive tissue heating. That would be the only possible biological effect of non-ionizing radiation. And because, if you recall that electromagnetic spectrum that I showed you, the energy is lower in non-ionizing radiation, therefore does not have sufficient energy to break chemical bonds and ionize molecules, and it cannot by itself cause DNA damage because it doesn't have enough energy to break the bonds within the DNA molecule. So based on this 4 watt per kilogram, which they considered then to be a threshold dose, nothing happens below it, guidelines were aimed at protecting against adverse effects that might occur due to increases in body temperature of 1 degree. And based on that threshold, they set thresholds for workers of 1/10 of the 4 watt per kilogram, being 0.4 watts per kilogram, and for the general population, 0.08 watts per kilogram, another five-fold factor for what they considered safety. Those are the whole body exposures. However, for local tissue, the levels are for workers, 8 watts per kilogram over any 1 gram of tissue for the FCC, and 1.6 watts per kilogram over any 1 gram of tissue for the general population. ICNIRP sets higher levels, 10 watts per kilogram over a larger cube of tissue for workers and for the general population, it's 2 watts per kilogram. Now, what's the difference between whole body and local exposure? If you're holding a phone next to your head, the antenna, this is a pen, not a phone, the antenna is right next to your head. It doesn't matter at that point what the whole body exposure is because the radiation is emitting right into the head. And therefore, the important value is the 1.6 or 2 watts per kilogram exposure. And you can obtain this kind of information from your mobile phone by looking up under the general setting for legal and regulatory, and it will provide you with an RF exposure information. In the United States, the FDA was concerned that maybe the guidelines do not protect from long-term exposure, only protecting from acute effects from thermal effects. So they requested to the NTP to conduct carcinogenicity studies of cell phone radiation in experimental animals, and this was to provide the basis to assess the risk to human health. In 2011, the International Agency for Research on Cancer held a review evaluation of RF radiation carcinogenicity and came up with a categorization of possibly carcinogenic to humans. This was based on information from human studies, which was called limited evidence, but limited evidence by IARC is defined as having causal interpretation being credible. However, certain factors such as bias could not be eliminated with reasonable confidence. There were also some animal studies of initiation promotion studies. And based on that, this was a panel of approximately 24 scientists who came to this conclusion, and that's made a lot of news. It also led to a lot of burst in energy and RF research. However, in 2020, ICNIRP and FCC reaffirmed their previous exposure limits to RF radiation. And this, as I mentioned 6 weeks ago, the ICBE EMF published their paper. The paper began more than a year and a half ago to examine the exposure limits in relationship to the vast number of studies that have been conducted over the past 25 years. And now we're challenging the validity of the assumptions that underlie these exposure limits. So just a brief look at some of the epidemiology studies. There have been a number of case control studies. At the IARC meeting, there had been studies conducted by Hardell and his group in Sweden and showed that there was a twofold risk with 1,640 hours of use. Ipsilateral means that the tumor and how the individuals held their phone were on the same side of the head. And you can see that there was now a threefold increase. Interphone was a multinational study conducted under the IARC support, conducted in many countries. And it also showed a significant increase, a 40% increase with 1,640 hours of use. And the ratio approximately twofold for ipsilateral with the tumor and the side of the head that the phone had been held was up to two. Since IARC, there have been additional studies conducted. A French national study showed essentially a threefold increase in risk with 896 hours of use. And you might imagine that this is not large compared to what people have been using phones over the years. There have also been multiple meta-analyses. These are studies which combine various studies to look at the level of risk. And it shows approximately a twofold increase in risk with a 2.5-fold increase in risk for same side of head, ipsilateral. Other tumors have also been reported. This is the data for glioma, but another tumor was acoustic neuroma, which another name is vestibular schwannoma. And it's important because of the cell type that I'll talk about in a couple of minutes. And thyroid carcinomas are also starting to show up. And part of the reason for this is that the antenna has moved down to the lower part of the phone, and we're starting to see increases in thyroid carcinomas. Now, as I mentioned, the putative threshold for effects are at this SAR of 4 watts per kilogram. However, there have been a number of studies that have shown effects, adverse effects below this threshold of 4 watts. And these are with extended durations of exposure. These are not 40-minute or 60-minute exposures. The carcinogenicity has been demonstrated in studies conducted by the National Toxicology Program and the Ramazzini Institute, showing an evaluation that indicated clear evidence of carcinogenic activity for the heart. And these were schwannomas, with some evidence for the brain gliomas. There were also pre-neoplastic lesions. These are focal hyperplasias, an increase in cell numbers in a focal spot in the heart or in the brain, which also contribute to understanding the basis for the development of brain or Schwann cell tumors in the heart. These are the same cell types then that have been identified in the epidemiological studies that I mentioned previously. Other effects include cardiomyopathy, damage to the heart muscle, sperm damage in humans and animals, reduced sperm motility and sperm count, altered sperm morphology, increased permeability of the blood-brain barrier. And in fact, even before 1990, there were behavioral studies conducted over a longer term, over 90 days, that showed effects at SAR values between 0.1 and 1.2 watts per kilogram. So obviously, the 4 watt per kilogram is not a threshold exposure or dose. Another claim is that there's no mechanism, and therefore, if there's no mechanism, how can this operate? Well, as mentioned by Erica a couple of minutes ago, oxidative stress has been observed in more than 100 studies at SAR values less than 4 watts per kilogram. Oxidative stress is an important endpoint. This is an increase in reactive oxygen species that can cause gene mutations. And it's also characteristic of many human carcinogens, including asbestos and UV radiation. There have also more than 150 studies demonstrating genotoxicity, damage to DNA at non-thermal exposures. And there are synergistic effects with co-exposure to other environmental agents. That is, you're not just exposed to RF radiation by itself. There are other chemicals which can have an effect, and the RF radiation exposure can exacerbate that effect and lead to an adverse effect, which needs to be considered in setting exposure guidelines, but it's also part of a mechanistic understanding of the effects of RF radiation. The guidelines are based strictly on an SAR value, and for both of the FCC and ICNIRP, they're based on frequencies up to 6 gigahertz, but they're averaged over 6 minutes and 30-minute intervals. And when you average, you don't capture the unique characteristics which can demonstrate bioactivity when there's a pulsed wave. So this is the carrier wave, which is a continuous wave, but it may come out as pulses, or it may come out as a modulated wave shown here, which can have totally different bioactive characteristics than simply SAR, which is a heat-based determination. There's also sensitivity and susceptibility to effects that can vary in humans. Erica talked about electromagnetic hypersensitivity. There are a number of susceptibility factors: age, genetics, health status, and exposure to other occupational exposures, chemicals. Also for children, as mentioned by Erica, and I think I'm showing the same figure from Gandhi, but you can see that there's more absorption with children than with adults. It's deeper penetration in the brain of children compared to adults. The brighter colors indicate higher exposure absorption. Also, developing organs are more susceptible to tissue damaging agents. And with RF radiation, the term of exposure could be lifetime, starting from actually in utero through the entire lifetime. Now, as I mentioned, the safety factors were applied to a putative threshold to determine what would supposedly be protective for workers in the general population. But if 4 watts per kilogram is not a true threshold, which it isn't, then setting safety factors to a non-threshold makes no sense. Agencies that are aimed at protecting individuals and populations from hazardous agents apply numerous safety factors for extrapolating animals' data to humans, for human variability, from short-term studies to lifetime, or database insufficiencies. All of these pertain to the basis for the exposure limits for RF radiation. So to be consistent with other approaches used by health agencies, a large adjustment factor would be needed. And when you have a large adjustment factor that's needed, this demonstrates that the exposure limits are relying on studies that are just simply inadequate for setting protective exposure limits. Another factor is the guidelines ignore any effects on wildlife. And as we know, many humans, non-human species use the Earth's geomagnetic fields for activities such as orientation, seasonal migration, mating, finding food, nesting. And that number of non-human species have magnetic sensing processes to sense low intensity changes in electromagnetic fields. And there's literature, a lot of literature demonstrating that RF radiation has disrupted the migratory patterns of birds, their orientation, and effects on bees. And lastly, when we come to 5G, it's assumed that because the penetration of the higher frequencies, as I mentioned, these would be up to 27 gigahertz, they're high frequency, but they don't penetrate well. And therefore, it's assumed that this would also not be a health problem. But there are no adequate health studies on the health effects from exposure to high frequency radiation from associated with 5G. So we might ask, well, will the exposure to the higher frequency waves compromise the skin's ability to provide protection from pathogenic microorganisms? This is part of the purpose of the skin. Will it exacerbate the development of skin diseases? Will it increase sunlight induced skin cancer? What about damage to the eyes, the lens and cornea, or to the testis? And will it adversely affect wildlife populations? So based on the information that we provided in this large paper, we've made a number of recommendations. One is there needs to be an independent assessment on the health effects and risks of radiation and it's urgently needed with the development of health protective standards for workers and the general population, especially for children and pregnant women. We need to take into account all of the information that has been generated on the effects of RF radiation over the past 30 years. Public health agencies should inform the public of health risks of RF radiation and promote exposure reduction strategies. This would be promote precautionary measures. Some of them just say, if you're concerned, this is what you can do, but they need a stronger position in the meantime. Radiation-free areas are needed for individuals with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Manufacturers should be encouraged to develop and implement technologies that reduce emissions to users of wireless devices. And this type of technology actually already exists. And further, deployment of 5G networks should be stopped until risks are assessed and safety is demonstrated, not simply assumed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rom, for your lecture. It was great. Thank you very much. And so now I'll give you the word to Theodora from Environment Health Trust. Hi, Theodora.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here and really honored to be speaking after these excellent presentations. Dr. Deborah Davis is unable to be here today and sends all her appreciation for the work that's been going on with your organization. Please go to our YouTube, actually, where we have some of our most recent talks that were just given with some international experts if you want to continue your journey on this issue. So I'm going to talk today about policy. And in addition to what we've heard from Cyprus, what other countries are doing, although I have to say, Cyprus is really leading the way in protective policy. So let me share my screen. Okay, can you see that? Okay, wonderful, thanks. So what are countries doing? I'm also going to talk about what some updates from the United States that have just been happening yesterday. But taking a step back, last year, after we sued the Federal Communications Commission for their outdated and irrelevant limits, which Dr. Melnick has just really spot on reviewed, the court ordered that the FCC provide a reasoned explanation for its decision to keep these limits. The FCC was mandated to show how it reviewed the science that was presented to them on the impacts to children, the impacts of long-term exposure, the ubiquity of wireless devices, and the way we have current technology now, which is everywhere, and in so many modulations and forms and so many devices, which is an issue that the FCC never even had before it when these limits were put forward in 1996. So far, there has been no response from the FCC, from their court mandate. And our organization, as well as several experts around the world and in the United States, submitted a legal filing to the FCC requesting that they take action. You can go onto our website to read those filings, but we're looking at next steps because it's egregious that we haven't seen any action from the FCC considering how widely wireless and cell phones and 5G and now 6G and 7G, which is proposed, is proliferating across the world. So despite evidence indicating adverse effects, the FCC states that the limits adequately protect children. We know this is inaccurate. The American Academy of Pediatrics has long urged the FCC to adopt limits that account for the unique vulnerabilities of children and pregnant women, as was described by Dr. Mallory Blythe and others, and the California and Massachusetts Medical Associations have both passed resolutions regarding radiofrequency radiation. And as was discussed earlier, the medical association's involvement is so critical. The Athens, Austrian, Cyprus, the International Society for Doctors for the Environment, Switzerland Doctors for the Environment, and Irish Doctors Environmental Association, and many others actually have been issuing proclamations, statements, recommending that, and recommendations that children reduce exposure, and also explaining how to reduce exposure, which is very important. So some news that just happened a few days ago is that the New York Community Board, they represent a section of New York City on the east side of Manhattan and Roosevelt Island. They are calling to halt 5G in the city. This is a community board of residents. And if you see in this picture, this monster pole, which is really what it is, they are putting up, their proposal is actually for 2,000 poles and wireless installations in the city. And since they've been going up right in front of people's homes, the people have been speaking out on this. So that just passed 2 days ago. And I want to show you a video of what is going on. Here's someone's apartment in New York City, and this is the 5G antenna right outside their window. And let me go to the next slide. So the towers are 32 feet high. They also have advertising screens, which is also a really important issue related to this technology rollout. And there's been a complete lack of transparency in the city. We've requested the radio frequency radiation reports to know, you know, are these compliant? What will the values be, the measurements be for the amount of exposure inside buildings and so forth? And we have yet to receive those. People who request that information are not being provided that information in New York City. And that despite the continued research by experts around the world, including the work by the Environment and Cancer Research Foundation, Tarmo Koppel and Dr. Leonard Hardell. This is an image from one of their papers, which you can, you know, go online. They have several exposure and measurement papers they've been doing related to 5G small cells, as well as antennas in front of apartments. But in this one, where they looked at the city of Columbia in South Carolina, they found hotspots and areas where there was higher exposures. And they mapped out the exposures and found these higher levels from these small cells, because now the antennas are closer to the ground. And of course, there's close range exposure. In contrast to the United States and many countries that have adopted ICNIRP limits with no protections, there are many countries that have identified schools and kindergartens and homes as sensitive areas. And they have more stringent exposure limits. They might have extra oversight where they take regular measurements of those areas, or some have bans or restrictions on cell towers near schools. Now, that does not mean that safety is assured by the current laws that are in place, because even these do not adequately address a lot of the issues that have just been presented in terms of impacts. However, they are far more protective than other countries that have simply adopted ICNIRP limits with no restrictions on antenna placements. Now, the New Hampshire Commission on 5G Health and Environment was formed by a bill that passed in the state of New Hampshire. And I wanted to share their recommendations because they really are a roadmap forward. And in fact, they are quite comparable to what Dr. Melnick has just presented from that incredible and important paper. But I wanted to just ensure that everyone was aware of these recommendations, because it's really a blueprint by a body of the state that investigated this issue. So the commission met for a year. They had presentations by many scientists from around the world, including NIH, and they issued 15 recommendations to the state of New Hampshire to protect the public. I'm only going to present a few of these today. They recommend an independent study of 5G health effects and environmental assessment of the impact, which, of course, has not been done at all. There has been no environmental assessment of 5G deployment in the United States and what all of these hundreds of thousands of cell antennas placed, not just in front of homes, but near trees and in protected ecological areas and so forth. There simply has been no adequate environmental review of the implications of that. They recommend that federal agencies with ecological knowledge develop radio frequency radiation limits that will protect the trees, plants, birds, insects, and pollinators. There are no federal safety standards, not in the United States or anywhere in the world, that have been developed, designed to protect flora and fauna. They recommend that wireless infrastructure be set back 1,640 feet from schools and homes. And in fact, the New Hampshire state was looking at a bill that would have done just that for the state. They ultimately recommended that there be continued bills to address this issue, and you can go online to watch those proceedings. But suffice it to say, there is a lot going on in New Hampshire on this issue. They recommend software changes to reduce radio frequency radiation into the body, and that there be multimedia campaigns by health agencies to educate the public on how to minimize radio frequency radiation, especially for infants, newborns, and pregnant women and children, just like what is happening with Cyprus. So we already have this fabulous model, and it really needs to be everywhere, worldwide. They recommend that schools and libraries replace Wi-Fi with non-radio frequency radiation emitting networks, such as hardwired Ethernet connections. Now, as Dr. Mallory Blythe discussed in her country, there are recommendations to reduce exposure to children, but most people don't know about it. And in fact, there are over 20 countries that have recommendations by their public health agencies that say very clearly that with straightforward, clear advice that you should reduce exposure, and especially children. However, most people in those countries aren't even aware, not all of them, but that such recommendations exist, but they do on websites and so forth. And we need to get that out to the public. Unfortunately, in the United States, they say, if you are worried, which is not clear nor straightforward. The French government, in fact, has an order that when you buy a phone, there's consumer information on how to reduce radiation to your body, like use speakerphone, use a hands-free kit. They say that children and adolescents should limit their time on phones. And they also say to keep the equipment away from the stomachs of pregnant women and adolescents. And there's been so much science presented. I'm not going to go into the science. You can go to Environmental Health Trust, where we have lists of scientific research. But one of the important issues, we often talk about cancer, but is those impacts the developing brain that Dr. Mallory Blythe talked about. This is research from a group in Turkey that does studies where they count brain cells and they expose animals and then look at what happens inside the brain, and they find decreased and damaged brain cells in several studies. So you have your control, you're exposed. And this was some of the research that the Federal Communications Commission ignored and did not respond to that was on the record. And yet this is a very typical situation that we see all around the United States. I can tell you that I did this with my babies because I didn't know. And I wore my kids right on my chest, and I had that phone right there. Thankfully, it was 20 years ago when we didn't use phones as much as we do now. But this is the reality. And people are not being told that phones should not be on the bodies. Children should not be using phones and wireless devices. Belgium and France, actually, have banned the sale of mobile phones designed for very young children. They also have banned the advertising for children, and that's because of the radiation. This is a screenshot from an awareness program that French Polynesia has, where they educate the public. They have a multimedia campaign educating the public on all the things that emit electromagnetic radiation in your home. You got your cell phone, your smart TV, your router, your video games, and then they have, it's a whole video. They talk about the smart light, the cordless phones. I actually put the text in. They don't have the text in there. You know, the microwave. They also talk about low frequency fields, magnetic fields as well. Yet in many countries, we have nothing, no information. In fact, we're told that everything's just fine. And as Dr. Mikalidou talked about, there are restrictions on Wi-Fi in Cyprus, also in France and French Polynesia and Israel and several municipalities in Spain and Belgium. They have banned Wi-Fi in kindergarten. And there are also restrictions on wireless and Wi-Fi in elementary schools in France and in Israel. Now, there's a lot of updates happening in the United States. And just super briefly, I talked about New Hampshire, how they have voted to move forward with laws to address this issue. The Wyoming governor wrote a letter to the FCC requesting immediate action to address the research and update their policies as necessary for the health and well-being of all citizens, including the most vulnerable, our children. And the Massachusetts Pittsfield City Council just wrote their state delegation requesting they call on the FCC to respond to the court mandate. And there's all kinds of other actions in the United States that you can find at Environmental Health Trust. I also want to share with you our new website, which is an educational website on how to reduce exposure. It's at healthytechhome.org. And we have information on what medical associations are doing and what you can do in your home to reduce exposure. And we highlight a lot of what's been presented here today, especially from Cyprus. And you can also go to environmentalhealthtrust.org for more information. And please sign up for our newsletter to stay updated on everything that is going on. And that is all. I hope I didn't run over too much.
Thank you very, very much, Theodora. That was a great explanation and showing us how the 5G antennas look like. Like they're huge. I thought they were going to be very small.
Not the size of pizza boxes, as the industry states. Wow. They're called monster poles in New York because they are literally 32 feet high and they are gigantic.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to call for the questions. And so we're going to go. So I call all the other lecturers as well. Please, Aline, could you put them back on the screen? And then, here the questions are coming. Marici, she asks, does electric magnetic pollution dehydrate the brain? This question is for Dr. Ron.
I haven't seen anything of that sort, but I don't know if it's really been looked at per se. Obviously, you can't do it in humans, and it could be done in animal studies, and in the histopathology that was done on animals, I don't recall any comment to that nature. So I don't think it would happen, but I haven't seen any specific data that would answer that question.
Another question to Theodora. How did the mainstream media in the U.S. report on FCC limits? Was that any challenge by EHT? Was the general public aware of it?
There were some news stories that came out when the court case was determined. However, the FCC is maintaining that their limits are protective. We just had some our investigative reports by ProPublica. You can go online and search ProPublica FCC Wireless, which is reporting how the FCC has not adequately addressed these issues, especially the National Toxicology Program results. So it's been a challenge, but New York is raising the issue in the media because it's New York currently.
So so you're talking about the awareness of the people in New York, right?
Correct. Well, the fact that it is New York where people are saying we don't want this is raising the attention countrywide. And I think that will continue. But the FCC court case got a lot of press, but then it goes away. And then there's a lot of there's a lack of awareness by much of the public in the United States. There's a lot to be done on that issue.
Right. Here, another question from Rosia Estela Horta. Is it contemplated to regulate the emissions that come from neighboring houses? Where, in fact, from my point of view, is trespassing on your property? Who could answer this question? Would you like me to repeat?
I would say it's not contemplated because they're not addressing the basic issues that currently exist. And we know that there are emissions coming from neighboring houses, but based on the limits that exist at the current time, there is no action at this point of emissions from one house affecting their neighbors.
I think that's an especially important issue for people with electromagnetic hypersensitivity and potentially other disease endpoints which are linked with EMF, where people should, in terms of human rights, etc., have a right to refuse exposure in their own premises. And it is incredibly difficult to achieve. I do know that some people have at least begun litigation headed in that direction, but to my knowledge, there's been no completed litigation.
Excellent. Is there any more questions? No more questions after that. Okay. So I guess we could end the presentations, and I would like to thank you all very, very much for your time, for your disposition to be here on this event in Brazil. We also have a lot to do here, and in terms of information and getting people awareness around this subject and how important it is to know what the real effects are on a long-term exposure from electric magnetic fields and radio frequencies. So thank you very much, Theodora. Thank you, Dr. Stella. Thank you, Dr. Ron. And thank you, Dr. Erica, once again.
Gracias. Muito gracias.
Thank you.
Muito, I would like to repeat, muito obrigada.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for those amazing presentations. So we are going to end here now, okay? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Long.